If what you want is real, Relevant Hunting, you are in the right place. With moderator Josh Miller, owner of Triple Point Outdoors, co-host Kevin Cook, owner of the Outdoor Pro Shop, and Brian Keitlinger, athlete and creator of Left in the Field Outdoors. Welcome to the Reinvent the Hunt podcast.
All right, everybody. Well, welcome back. We're glad to have you for episode 5 of the Reinvent the Hunt podcast. I'm Josh from Triple Point Outdoors, and we have the usual suspects on tonight with us, Kevin from Maryland, the Outdoor Pro Shop, and also Brian Keitlinger from Left in the Field Outdoors from PA with us tonight. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. It's been a busy week for everybody, and the pollen's back, I can see. I'm snotting all over the place.
Don't start. Oh, man.
Getting soft in old age.
We got 3 inches of snow. I don't know what you're talking about. We got 3 inches of snow on it. Yeah. And it hasn't stopped snowing all day. I mean, it's been nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy right now weather-wise. And tonight we're welcoming Rich from the Killer Food Plot Company up in that state up north. I've heard so far they're from. And I want to welcome you down here to the great state of Ohio and share with us your knowledge on food plots and seeds and all the things related to that. Because quite honestly, usually when it comes to food plots, I scratch a ground, throw a bunch of crap out, and hope it grows.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a lot of people do, which is fine. It does work, right? It's it doesn't have to be rocket science. It's really what you want to put into it, right? You reap what you sow. So they're not simple to do. You can have luck with just throwing things on the ground, but to do and to get what you really want and to achieve it, I mean, you got to really put the work in, do your soil samples, and do the step-by-step thing. I mean, that's really the work. You just got to do the work. So I'm here. You guys got questions of, what do you guys want to know about food plots? So I'm here to give you guys any information you want.
I guess Brian, you jump in first.
I'll jump right in because I've talked to Rich quite a few times and have taken a million notes. I put a kill plot in this year. And it was late, and Rich's expertise, I ended up putting clover, chicory, and oats in, and my killer food plot oats germinated and grew within like 3 days, and I had deer in my kill plot clear. They're still in there now. The oats are gone, but there's still a little bit of clover and stuff left. I was just blown away with that stuff and how quickly the oats, grew. And I killed my target buck out of that kill plot this year. So first time making a kill plot, I didn't have time to do soil sample. I'm getting to it this year as soon as I can get in there, cause it's just a mud hole, but I actually opened up 2 other spots in my woods for other things that we're going to do. And, so I've talked to Rich quite a bit about what I'm looking to do, and it's been nice enough to help me draw up, a plan of different stuff that I want to do within those plots. And I'm pretty much a newbie at that as well. So it's been great to have someone who's willing to take the time, take the phone calls and get you on the right track. So if you're a newbie, don't hesitate to immerse yourself in it and learn.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Rich, what time of year do you start like planning food plots, or is it dependent of what you're planning?
So yes, it is both. So it's really soil temperature, right? You guys, Ohio's pretty close, northern Ohio's pretty close to what Michigan is. They say we can start planting in April, around middle of April. And you can, like the clovers and anything you can frost seed, that will germinate at a lower temperature, soil temp around 40. But I usually like to wait until June, until that soil temperature is 60 to 65 degrees, 3 consecutive nights. Just because, I do it for a living, right? And I want people to be happy with what's going on. I don't want to push my luck. If you get it into the ground too fast, and you're going to start competing with the native vegetation that's there. So yes, it depends on the soil temperature, what you're going to plant. Like clovers can be planted real early. Corn can be planted when it's 50 degree soil temp. But you start getting into your warm grasses and stuff, and they like to be a lot warmer, 65, 70 degrees. So, and then you get into your fall planting, right? So, and brassicas are August. I like to do my brassicas in August. Our Carnage brassicas, they take right off first week of August here. It'd be real close around you guys. You know, I see the soil temps in Ohio are real close to us right now. PA is a little colder, and obviously you're getting snow, you're saying, so probably even colder now, but good luck with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it really depends. Our border patrol has got a sorghum in it, so don't put that in the ground until the soil temp is 63 degrees, 65 degrees for three consecutive nights. You know, because nights get cold. So,
right.
And there's a real cool thing online you can get on, and it'll give you, you punch in the area code or zip code, and it'll tell you what the soil temp is, what it has been for a 5-year average, what it is today, yesterday. And that's real helpful. I was scanning it today. So I was seeing that Ohio down there by Columbus was only a couple of degrees colder than what we are up here. So, you know, our planting season would be real close, which it is anyway, but.
I got you.
Okay. I had a couple of questions for you. I just thought as you were talking, actually, I guess one is, you know, the advantages of frost seeding versus a full plant in June. Like frost seeding is pretty early, like right now. Do you recommend people do both, or just kind of is frost seeding just a, I hope it works and germinates decent, or for different species, or how's that work?
I use frost seeding to freshen up my clovers, my chicories, things that are already established that the deer have just pummeled through the winter time. They've pawed at it. Now there's blank spots or bare spots, you know, so I go through there. Some people do it over the snow. I like to wait until at least some of the snow is gone so I can take a visual and see what I'm going for and where I'm seeding at. That's what I like to do, frost seeding. Some people, if you take the time in the fall, right, and you have that area that you can sacrifice, that you don't need food for that fall hunt, and you can kill it all off and have that blank slate for frost seeding, you can get away with frost seeding and establish a new one better that way.
Makes sense.
But, you know, if you really want the bang for your buck, right, get in there, do the work, do a soil sample, kill all the vegetation off, turn the dirt, pack it, kill it all off in a couple of weeks when it starts growing again, then you can go in and start planting what you want. You know, I mean, that's, you're going to get the most tonnage out of it that way. And that's what you're really looking for, right? I mean, yeah. Food plots aren't cheap. I don't care how you look at it. You can spend a lot of money in a food plot. And you know, the one mistake people make is they don't do a soil sample. So I've seen people that have thrown $1,200 at a food plot that only needed $700, and they may have burned it out, right? Because there's too much fertilizer. Or you see the opposite, it needed $1,200 and only put $700 in it, and it didn't get what they wanted. And that'll, a soil sample all also allow you to choose your seed blend. You know, maybe oats are cheaper for you to amend the soil to do that year than brassicas or clovers. So save your money up for the next year and just plant the lesser of the evils for your budget. So there's all sorts of ways to go about it. You know, I always tell people, if you're doing it yourself, start small. You know, don't think you need to bust out 5 acres out there and then fail, because now you're poor and you're mad, right? I mean, you don't have any money, you don't have any food, right. You're not seeing any deer, right? And the neighbors are still shooting your bucks. It's just like, oh man. So start out small, start out quarter acre, start out with a half acre, perfect what you're doing, get a system, you know, find out what works for you in your area. Pick people's brains, like Brian, you know, calls me, and I love sitting there talking on the phone and hearing what the problems are and what he's doing and figuring out a plan, right? That's what I'm here for. It's sure. Great. Okay. It's like sitting here talking to you guys, right? We get to talk hunting. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's right. It's great anyway. It doesn't matter what you talk about. It's great anyway.
Right.
And I had a second question for you off the top of my head. Just I looked at your website before getting on tonight. And is there a way, I don't know if it's possible, you maybe have it already, can someone put in their zip code around the country that's going to establish a food plot? Can they put in a zip code on your website and then get like a recommended blend to put plant in their area?
So no, you're better off doing that with a soil sample, right?
Okay.
I mean, because some areas, you just got to know what soil is, how much organic matter is in there. If you're planting in sand, loamy soil, clay, that is going to be your blueprint. You know, you wouldn't build a house or a barn without a blueprint. So I tell people that's where your blueprint starts in a food plot, is that your soil sample. Like ours has 11 different spots on our soil samples, you check every one of those, right? And it tells you how to amend the soil for every different seed, because every seed takes a different amendment for the soil to an extent. You know, some of them are real close, but so yeah, I mean, the regions, really, if you're southern and it's real hot, yeah, maybe you want to go with oats or something. You know, I say our lethal winter oats, when failure is not an option, plant those things. I mean, you just spill them on your tractor tire, it rains and it grows. So yeah. That's a great blend to put in. Brian, you know, he had good success with it last year. So the deer pound it, it's a really underestimated food source for deer. It doesn't look as beautiful as them brassicas, right? Not the big 4-inch leaves, and it just looks stemmy, and people think, well, that's not, deer don't like that, but it's really beneficial for their gut health. And they love it. They cling to it late in the season. In Michigan, November, they just pound it in November. So it's a real good firearm attractant, you know, during that season. So
that's really cool.
I know the first blend I tried was years ago. I bought this 12-acre piece of property. My son and I spent hours down in there cleaning out a spot in front of a natural funnel where we had some old apple trees and this and that. We put 150-gallon water tank in there. My wife and I went and worked on that together. And we planted the Deep Woods blend. Now, again, we didn't open anything up. And I talked to, some people, and I said, you know, try this Deep Woods blend, because it's, you can tell, Rich, what's all in it. But I mean, it grew right away. My son killed the biggest buck that we've killed off of the property on it. And we had that buck coming in there, you know, all the time, coming in to eat. Just, I know there was oats in it. Maybe there was clover. It's just a mix up. But I mean, without a whole lot of sun, that stuff took off again in less than a week. The deer started pounding it. And the big lesson I learned from that whole thing is we got right in the middle of gun season. We got a little bit of snow. And the leaves laid on the food plot, the snow laid on it. By the time everything melted, it killed everything off. So when I talked to Rich, he said, well, you're going to have to, you know, do something about that. This year, we're not allowed to hunt on Sundays. I would go up like every other Sunday with my blower, and I would blow out of this quarter acre plot. And I'm having my blower out there. I'm blowing leaves out of that thing. And again, I mean, I laugh because I got trail cameras on it. I'd blow those leaves off. And I'd leave and I'd get pictures within 2 hours of the deer coming in there, and they just hammered it. Turkeys came in there and hammered it. And like I said, it was well worth the quick conversation we had, saying, hey, I didn't do a soil sample or anything. I just want to get something down. And you know, they literally did. They hammered those oats. They hammered, I did put brassicas and chicory and stuff in there. Some of the stuff hardly even got to come up, and they were just mowing it down to nothing, because we have so many does. That's why I opened up more land on my property to do some more things. But I have used the Border Patrol before at the front of my property for a screening, because it's right on a dirt road and I didn't want people looking in there. That was easy to put in. So I guess, Rich, my question to you is this: is it best to have a drill to drill it in, or is it best to do, you know, if I'm wanting to do something with it has like bigger seeds in it, to till it, drag it, put it in, and then call to pack it? What would you suggest?
Well, I mean, the seed drill is always nicer, because you can just sit on the tractor and let it do the work for you, right? You're not walking around and doing a 3-mile-an-hour walk while you're spreading it. But I do both. You can be real successful with doing both, broadcasting it. The rule of thumb is small seed. And when I say small seed, I'm going to say clovers and your chicories. Those just want to be pressed into the ground. So the dirt prep for that would be, you know, once you kill it all off, you rototill it, you cull to pack it, you broadcast your seed, then you cull to pack it again. Mm-hmm. Just want to make that seed to soil contact. You know, you want to press it in firm. Plus it helps keep the birds off it a little bit. Crows, they've got eyes like no other. I can't believe they can go out there and pick that stuff, but they
absolutely
do.
Absolutely. Stinking things.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah, frustrating. Now you get into like soybeans, and which is in the Border Patrol, which is a larger seed. Now what we do there is we will kill it all off, rototill it. Then I will actually broadcast that seed down. I will take one pass over it with a harrow drag, chain link fence, the old school box spring from mattress, right? And then pack it. So that way you put that seed down, it's under the dirt a little more. Again, for turkeys, that helps out a lot. That bigger seed's real obvious for those birds. So those are the two different, you know, dirt preps for the different size seed. Other than you having to do the walk, right? The 3 mile an hour walk, and try to figure out how much seed's coming out of that bag seeder as you're going along. It's a real effective way to do it. I always tell people, one of the biggest questions, and I never have a good answer, is how do I adjust my seeder, my spreader, hand spreader or the toe behind? There's really no good answer for that because they're all different. You just, like for fertilizer and seed, especially, I say start out small, right? You can't pick up chicory seed out of the soil once you spread a whole bag on a quarter acre when it's supposed to take an acre, right? So take the extra effort and make maybe two passes, you know, walk that property twice, just make sure that you're not overseeding in a small area and you're getting an even coverage that way. Sure. It's a little more work, right? But the benefits are there and you'll notice it. As men, we like to overseed. The bag says a half acre. Well, let's put two bags on that half acre, right? Because that means it's just going to be better. Yeah. Don't do that. With our seed count's really high, right? So if it says it does a half acre, it truly does a half acre. If you do more than that, you will get growth. And people are like, man, it grew, but my clover got 4 inches tall. It should be 8 to 18 inches tall, right? Well, it's choking itself out, right? There's so much fight for the nutrients that's there. It's just stunning everything. It's choking itself out. You're going to get the growth. You're not going to get the tonnage. Not going to get them big lush leaves that you're looking for and the height off it. So it's real important to keep the seed at what the bag says. So
it's incredible science. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a lot to it.
There is, you know, and our bags are designed. There's a lot of smart people that went into putting our seeds in our bags and the combinations. And, you know, I can't take credit for hardly any of it. I mean, it was a combined effort from a lot of smart people. So, you know, you want to put seeds in the ground that complement each other. Like our clovers have 6 different seed blends in there, right? You got to make sure that they want to grow with each other and they're not going to compete with each other. We do that because clovers, they mature at different times of the year. So the peak nutrients is at different times for the animals. So if you put more out there, 6 different blends, well, then there's peak nutrients for the deer throughout the season, not just the clover, you know, peaking out at one time of that year. So it's important to have kind of that mixture in there. So,
and that's interesting. That's all, that's like such high level stuff. Yeah. It's crazy.
There's a lot to go to it, you know, I mean, but like I say, there's a lot of good people out there that help, and, you know, we try to do customer service is a big thing, right? I mean, I'm not that guy. I'm not on the side of a NASCAR car, you know, but I can pride myself in customer service and taking the time to talk to people and working through, even if they're not buying my products. I mean, educate them and help them learn. I mean, it's just for the experience, you know. I mean, food plotting can be a lot of fun. It can be a lot of work, but if you're not scared of work, man, it turns into a lot of fun. So,
hands down, that's cool.
What's the hardest soil to grow stuff in, Chris, that you've seen?
Sand. Sand
that's all we have around here is sand.
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, what's sand? They put sand in pool filters because it's a great filter, right? So you get that one hard rain and that $400 of fertilizer you put in, now it's 4 inches below your root base because it just pushed it through everything. We got a real sweet product called Retain. It goes into the soil, you work it in, and it starts out the size of kosher salt, and it swells up when it rains. It swells up to the size of a jumbo marble, and then it pulls in all the nutrients and all the water it possibly can, and it stores it until the weather dries out, and it leaches it back into the root base because that's where it's going to be when you work it in. Does that in the soil for 3 years. And it's potassium based. So once it's done and its life cycle's gone, it's just potassium back in the soil. So it doesn't leave a footprint, it just leaves more nutrients. That's a great product. It replaces the organic matter in your sand, right? You put it in that sand, it holds everything at that root base. So that way it's not washing by, and it gives it a chance. So you put it in clay, when it swells up, it breaks up that compaction in the clay. So right. Now, you know, it swells up, the clay breaks apart. Now it shrinks down. It leaves them voids in the ground. Oxygen get to that root base, you know, and the plants can get fed that way. I have clay out here. It's terrible. So it works really good for breaking up that compaction and keeping that moisture in there. So
it's incredible.
That's great.
Yeah.
Rich, can you talk a little bit about the Soil Defender product as well?
Yeah. So our liquid fertilizer.
Yep.
That's the energy drink of fertilizers right there. Right? I mean, that's it's instant gratification. It's not, you're not waiting. You spray that on, and what it is it's a liquid that when it hits the soil, it's using your soil for you. It's waking up the bacteria that's in that dirt, and it's creating it, and it's going out, and that bacteria is getting all the nutrients it can, and it comes back and it collects onto the roots of the plant. When it does that, it offloads all the nutrients that it took in, and then it dies, becomes part of the root. And then more colonies go out, and it just keeps doing that. So what happens is the root base is now getting deeper. So now your tolerance for the drought is better, right? Because your root's down there to where the moisture's trying to get away from everything. It's a great product. I spray it right on the soil. As soon as I'm done planting, you know, you kick back and you think, oh, I'm done. Whew, that's a lot of work. And it's like, oh, yeah, I got to spray something else, you know. So you get back on, you spray the soil. It helps that take off. It helps the germination. Then when it comes up, you can spray it right on the vegetation, right on the leaves. At a lighter concentration, right? Because you don't want to take chance of burning it. It's a 10-5-5. So, I mean, it's just like your NPK of a fertilizer bag. It's your nitrogen, it's your 10. Okay. So it's a great product. Works really, really well.
Yeah, that's all interesting.
Now, you're up there in Michigan. And so I'm sure you know Tony the Pratt, or have heard of Tony the Pratt.
Mm-hmm.
Who does all his food plot and all this stuff. He talks a lot about this new high yield corn, high oil based corn, anything like that. Any feedback or any you know, kickback on that? I mean, are there any new products that Killer Food Plots goof around with and testing around with for, you know, anything special?
I'm messing around a little bit with a different fertilizer. Because of I'm going more for a clover kind of thing. Because, you know, a lot of people don't know that clover doesn't need nitrogen once it's established, right? Because it pulls the nitrogen out of the air and it deposits it back into the soil. A good hardy 1 acre plot of clover can put 100 to 150 pounds of nitrogen back into the soil in one season. You know, I mean, that's a good clover plot. So you don't want to put clover or nitrogen on it. You know, I tell people, you put nitrogen on your clover, it's like that kid that sits on the couch. You just keep throwing him a bag of chips, right? He gets lazy. He's never going to do what he's supposed to do. He's just going to sit there. Clover will get lazy. It won't do what it has to do because you're feeding it. So I like to put potash on it. You know, when I'm done hunting, season's over, go out, throw 100, 150 pounds of potash on it, just per acre, and then just mow it and let the deer mow it for me. So
now, where your company, as far as we guys, your seeds, your mixes, your blends, do you do all that, or how's that work?
So the mixes and everything were designed, the former owner, Nick Percy, you know, and a lot of smart people, they designed the blends. I don't mix it. I have a company that mixes it for me. But it's our, you know, it's our design that, or our, I guess our mixes that were designed for the Killer Food Plot, right? I mean, it's not like we're taking a mix and just putting our label on it. We're not doing that. It does happen, but that's not what we're doing. So these are mixes that are specifically mixed up for us at a supplier. So
okay. Yeah, I wondered about that, how it works. Also, it's on your website. You guys do like full service. You'll come out, you do an assessment, you'll do some timber, like maybe hinge cutting, and you want to get into some of that. What else do you guys do?
So I'm not into hinge cutting. It's dangerous, and you know, I'm a one man show. I don't need to be hinge cutting and messing myself up. I like to tie down limbs. You know, I like to do that, make deer bedding by tying it down with paracord, and just making canopies over bedding areas that way. There's different ways of doing it. Hinge cutting does have a purpose. I just don't get into it. But we do come out, and I will get you in touch with a logger to do timber management, you know, 10-year cuts. And we do land consults. turnkey food plot install. You know, I come right out there and do everything from the soil samples to spraying the soil defender when I'm done planting. So
how far, like how, what's your geographically, how far do you get out from Michigan? How far is your reach?
I will go where somebody wants to pay me, be honest with you. Sure. I haven't had to leave Michigan the last couple of years, which has been really nice. But in the past, I mean, we've been as far as Iowa, Colorado, Ohio, Indiana, Missouri, Kansas. There's been several states we visited. I've just been fortunate enough that Michigan's been keeping me super busy. So
that's great to hear. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's less wear and tear in the truck.
Yeah, I get it. And also, I guess talking to other things, not just food plots and that sort of thing, but your hunting season this year. What are you hunting up Michigan, and how's your season go?
It went pretty good. I shot a 8-point. It wasn't my biggest 8-point, but it was a decent 8-point during earlier bow season. It was one of them gift deers, you know. I'm sitting there and I have my own line of scents, a few scent line, and I was using my red hot doe. Now he's like spraying a half moon in front of me about 10 foot, half moon in front of me about 10 yards out. And it'd been a real slow morning, and out of nowhere comes this deer. I see it from 200 yards away, and it's like I was pulling him in on a string. I mean, he came right to me, never stopped. Right to me, got to that 10-yard spot and stopped, and he couldn't commit to which way he wanted to go. And then all of a sudden he committed, and when he turned, I bleated and he stopped, and it was just, I couldn't resist, you know? So yep. I shot him, and then I waited. It was the next two hunts, two bigger bucks came out. You know how that goes. It's like, they weren't season ending, deer, but they're like, oh, you know, if I'd have been more patient one more day, but so, you know, that happened. And then I went out during muzzleloader and I was going to go doe hunting. I was like, I just go shoot some meat for the freezer. And I had a nice 10 point come in and he surprised me, and I watched him walk in, and I was like, well, I was going to shoot the mature doe. And then I seen him at 100 yards. And I was like, well, he looks kind of decent. And all of a sudden he mounted that doe, you know, second rut was in. And I'm like, I've never seen that in the woods. This is my first time. I'm like, well, I'll give the guy his dues, you know. And so he got done. And I'm like, well, he's still standing there. And I scoped him again. And I ended up shooting him. And he ended up being 10 point, 19 and 3/4 inch inside spread. So, you know, for exactly. Michigan buck, that's a pretty respectable deer. I was pretty happy with him. So
that's awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's always fun to kind of look at, you know, people's food plots and what they put in, especially, you know, here where we're at, Central Ohio. I've got, you know, so many ag fields around. There's so much corn. There's so many soybeans. Mm-hmm. I think these little honey hole food plots, if you put them in right, you know, they're so sweet to the deer because it's different. It's like a candy store for them. I mean, just it's different food. They have to like it.
Yeah, like Carnage brassicas, right? That you're not finding those in the wild. They're not just growing on the edge of the road like your asparagus and stuff. So I've had some guys put it in. They're like, they never even touched it, walked right through it, didn't bother with it, you know, which to me, that just floors me, because the deer don't walk through my brassicas. I mean, they walk to it. That's what they do. So, but then, you know, I told them, I says, give it a year, and they planted it again. And by the third year they were pounding them, they had found it. And yeah, I don't know, it just got me an acquired taste. It was up north, which I thought, you know, brassicas are sugar beets in there. You'd think up north everybody's fed deer sugar beets up there. It wouldn't take long for them to find them. But yeah, it's just, I guess, what the deer like and what they're used to. But you give them what they don't have, like you're saying, year-round food source, like our clover stays green 365 days a year, right? It doesn't grow, but it's green. It holds its nutrients. The deer know that. So they pound it. I have 20-30 deer in my backyard and front yard daily. They're always there. I have a doe problem, so I mean, I really need to concentrate that.
Who doesn't?
I should have shot that doe and let that buck go this year, you know, in hindsight. But who doesn't like to shoot horn? So, but yeah, it's just it's what, like you say, it's like candy, right? I mean, deer love corn. You put it in a feeder, they come to it. Doesn't have a lot of nutritional value to it, but they love it. Put it out there and they'll come. So kind of with a food plot, you put something out there that nobody else is, and you could be that guy. So
yeah, I thought it was amazing. I planted a plot quite a few years ago now. It was the first plot I ever did, really. And I had some, I think they were sugar beets, I think, what's the difference between a sugar beet and a turnip? You can help me out with that. Same, different?
The sugar beet and the turnip is it's not as sweet as the beet is going to be, and it grows differently, you know. I mean, it's not as big as a ball.
Yeah, this is like a real this is like a baseball size. It was in the ground. I had this target buck I was chasing. I put him in, didn't know what I was doing, you know, plowed up some about like a half acre. And I didn't even know they really grew that well. I'm back there hunting, and I made a big mistake, first of all. It was the opener of the Ohio shotgun season. Of course, I'm out there with my vertical bow, you know, because my wife's like, you should take the shotgun. She was right. You know, at the end of the day, she was right. She's like, you should take the shotgun. I'm like, no, I'll be a man and take my vertical bow, right? I'm going to hammer hit my vertical bow. And I'm sitting there, and he, about 40 yards out, 45 yards out, it was like pushing 50, he walks up out of the steep hill into the food plot and starts pawing them, you know, down there pawing. It gotten cold, so they must have got sweet, right? Mm-hmm. He's down there pawing them out of the ground trying to get them. And I look up, and he's at 50 yards, and I'm going, why did I bring my bow out today? And, of course, I admit I thought I had him, and I took a shot at 45, and it was under his belly, and I found the arrow the next fall. I think I was back to the tractor. I couldn't find my arrow, never hit him at all, and I found it the next fall dragging a piece of a timber up the tractor. So that's a funny story. Big deer, though. Big 8-point. Big heavy 8-point.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. I did that 1 year. I usually use don't use a crossbow, but I had one available, and this deer kept 50 yards, you know, and I just, with my regular bow, I just wasn't comfortable at 50 yards. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take the crossbow. I'm going to get this deer finally, you know. I'll be darned if that deer didn't come within 10 yards of me that morning. I ended up getting him, but I destroyed the crossbow because he was so close. I wasn't paying attention. The limb hit the tree and just the crossbow came apart. I mean, there's pieces of it flying. Geez. I still hit him and got him, but it was a weird experience. I tell you what, absolutely. I haven't used a crossbow since. So
I did that once in a buck on my grandfather's farm. I had the same thing. He came to a scrape in front of me, and I had the right limb way too close to the tree and wasn't paying attention. And when I shot, it reverberated, hit it, kicked back, and just, I think it scoped at me in the eye or something. I ended up getting the buck, but we never found him until the next, I don't know, late fall. He ran probably, I don't know, 80 yards and died. And it was in like some CRP, right? My grandfather, we walked right through it. Didn't even see that deer, didn't see its body or anything. And then the next week, my grandfather was mowing that and found that buck. And I could not believe it. Because we had walked probably, you know how they lay down, you can't see them sometimes. Probably you're within 5-10 yards of that deer. Never saw it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a crazy story.
I've seen it happen when they're alive. You know, I've watched people go and push a swamp, and I was standing on the backside, and these guys get past, and all of a sudden this buck jumps up behind him and runs the other way. I'm like, yes, wow, sir. That's a pretty smart deer, you know? Yes, sir.
I
love telling those guys that story. I'm like, you didn't see that deer? They're like, why didn't you shoot it? And I'm like, I just thought it was funny.
And the funny thing is, people won't believe you that they do that. They absolutely do that. Well, you get up and go away.
Absolutely. Especially later in the season when they're being pressured. You have to step on top of them for them to move. They'll wait till you're past, and they'll skirt right behind you.
Or how many times?
All the time.
Gotten up in your tree stand and you sit there, and all of a sudden he stands up 20 yards from you, sat there watching you the entire time. You know, you're still trying to get your bow to the stand. It's like,
where were you at?
This big 8-point I shot a couple years ago. We were doing a deer drive, and I just walked into the edge of the woods, and it was coming to the end of the deer drive, and the people were walking towards me back across this patch of woods, and this deer was laying down in the thick stuff, literally 20 yards from me. Didn't even know he was there the whole time until they started walking. I almost stepped on top of him.
That is something else.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
And then 20 yards in front of me for 40 minutes.
And then other times they'll bust like 100 yards out. You guys have that happen too. How they see me, I'm 100 yards away.
Right. Yeah. They're smart, man.
Yeah.
Smart.
Crazy animals. Yep. Well, I want to thank you, Rich, for coming on tonight. You and
Food Plots
sounds like an awesome company. And let me out there know if you're putting a food plot in this late spring and summer, take a look at Killer Food Plots, their seed blends. It looks like some awesome stuff to put in the ground. Of course, Brian has some testimony as to how well it does. So I want to thank you for coming on tonight, Rich.
Oh, I appreciate you guys having me, man. You guys got any questions or need anything, just let me know. So I like them hour conversations. There's nothing wrong with that at all. So
definitely appreciate it. Well, from all of us here at the Reinvent Hunt Podcast, I hope you guys like, subscribe, and give us a review. This will be out this weekend here. We'll get edited and take a look at it. So hope you have a great night.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.